march on. Do not tarry. To go forward is to move toward perfection. March on, and fear not the thorns or the sharp stones of life's path. Khalil Gibran. Of my sermon. I am here to say to you that this past year has been like a roller coaster ride and presented me with many challenges. Is there anyone else in here who's felt challenged in the last year? You want to speak on it? Anybody have anything to say? Want the microphone?
It has been a real challenge to see that there will be any good that comes from our buffoon that we elected president.
Anyone else?
Well, in direct response to the last speaker, I've just decided I have to find the good that's going to come from this because it's too difficult to live with all the bad that happens on a daily basis. And that is, you know, I really think this experience is going to wake up a lot of people to become more active participants in our government, in our democracy, and in our social lives. Because I think we've gone through a long period of people really being very passive. And obviously, our democracy demands participation. And so I think that's the good, and we all have to work towards that and encourage everybody to really do their part. And I'll stop before I sound like I'm giving a sermon. Thank you. Oh, and I have one more thing I wanted to mention as a joy. A bit off topic. If you haven't seen the film Hidden Figures, speaking to Steve's experience with NASA, please see that movie. It is totally wonderful.
I have found it challenging to stay in love for my country and my fellow countrymen.
So I took your question more broadly and just the political challenges aside, which are great. I have a 14-year-old daughter, so I'm not sure if I need to say more than that. And it's a challenge being a parent, and it's a challenge raising a girl. I don't know what it's like to raise a boy, but I know it's a challenge to raise a girl to feel good about herself and confident. And middle school is a tough time, and it's hard on the whole family to figure out how to navigate it. It's all good, and it's going to be fine, and it's nothing unusual about the challenge, but it's a challenging year.
I'd like to say, too, that I've been having trouble finding a job in this area, so I'm still living in Michigan and commuting, and that's been my challenge this year. It's really getting me down.
Anyone else?
It's been a very challenging year. For our family. Alexa thought that what she was feeling was related to the election, and then she discovered that it was cancer. And this occurred at the same time that her 17-year-old was diagnosed with MS. So it's been a very challenging year. We are in an okay place at the moment. I mean, the comment earlier about, you know, it's really all about family certainly rings true for me. And I'll share one little thing about Nathan, because being 17 years old, there's always this dynamic between he and his parents, okay? Sometimes it's very challenging, okay? And one of the wonderful things for me in terms of how I experience him today, knowing the lows that he went through, was when he pushes back before I would push back and we would be in this confrontation. And now I experience that as joy, which is really an unbelievable sort of thing that just occurs as a feeling. But we're doing much better, so I'm looking forward to that.
Is that it? Thank you for sharing. I really appreciate it. And here I stand with this microphone when there's one here. Am I blowing your ears out? Okay, good. Being here today is the result of a mad, crazy journey for me. I recognize myself and each one of you that spoke and some that didn't. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to share my journey with you and my thoughts as well. My topic was motivated by my grandson, Zion. By the grace of Catherine and Steve, he'll be participating in next week's COA ceremony. I'm anxious to hear his credo. So how did he motivate my topic? It's a belief I've had my whole life but did not act on for years. That is, love is essential. I came to a UU church for the first time after reading the seven principles and six sources in the UU on the UUA website. It sounded so much like me. And after I got there, after the first sermon, Zion told me he wanted to come back. This was in San Juan, Texas, near the Mexican border. And we've been coming ever since. The other thing that happens periodically with us is that somebody asks what denomination we are. And Zion chirps up and gives him his spiel that he learned in RE. And that is that we UUs, we respect all religions. Blub, blub, blub. I don't know what he says in the middle, but his ending has always resonated with me. And that is the most important thing is love. I give kudos to REU here at UUCS for teaching him that. Just like you, events in the last 6 months have presented challenges for me. The challenge is to continue to love in the face of things that take me back to my response to stories that my elders told to me. Family legends, stories told in the African American experience. People being torn from their families and hauled off to detention centers. A disregard for what some people hold sacred for the other's purpose of exploiting the land, like what's happening in Standing Rock. People running for the Canadian border to escape the land of the free. Where's the love? How can I love someone, a government that does such things, motivate such actions? Still, I hold that they are a part of me, and therefore I will love them in spite of what they do. In 1976, when Stevie wrote Love is in Need of Love, as he reflected on the wonder of his unborn child, I was a very angry person. My daughter sitting in the back can testify to this. I tried to get free training for a job that would pay enough for me to care for my family. My husband thwarted my efforts. He didn't support the kids, and he stopped my efforts to do so by attempting to place them in foster care. That was a very traumatic experience for her, as she told it to me some days later. It's a long story. If you want to hear the whole one, give me about 15 minutes after services. My neighbor's son, in that same year, attacked my one-year-old baby with a knife. I was angry, to say the least. You see, I lived in public housing, which I deemed an open-air insane asylum. There were approximately 2,000 people living on 1 acre of land. 3/4 of them were children under the age of 13. With adults, the adults dropped out of middle school and high school. The boy attacked the kid, my son, my youngest son. Fortunately, no harm was done. He ran home. I went to confront his parents. You know, that mother motivation. I had to get mine in. I felt at that time. All I wanted to do was drag her behind outside and mop it up on the sidewalk. But Mr. Wilson from the rent office came along, and he talked to us for a few minutes. I thought he would agree with me because we spent time talking about values and principles and things, and we seemed to agree on those. Instead, he told me to apologize. I didn't. Later, when I asked him why, he said, because I thought you understood. I understood when I was attacked, I must counterattack hard and heavy. But his words stuck with me as I attempted to determine their true meaning. It was years before I realized it was a love in need of love moment. I think that's what he was trying to get across to me. Now, that may seem strange to some of you, but bear with me as I continue my story. One thing came clear to me over the next 2 years that I spent in that neighborhood was that my neighbors lived daily with hopelessness. Something one might feel a sense of in the second song, waiting for the world to change. John presents us with what he evidently perceived and felt that his generation, Gen Y, saw as despair, hopelessness, caught up in a system that seemed to be working against them, that didn't offer them any confidence or security. My neighbors was basically the same. They couldn't see a way out of poverty. They couldn't keep a man or control their children. For them, men were having a husband was important because they were single parents, okay? And mostly female. And they couldn't see their way out. They couldn't control their children or their circumstances, and they couldn't even see their kids see a future in them because they had already started, in many instances, heading down a path. It was hopeless. They would always be stuck in this vicious cycle. Many of those women lost their children to the prison system and death. Literally, whole families were wiped out. Am I right?
Yes.
She was there. She witnessed it. Hopelessness fuels despair and violence. I didn't grow up with those thoughts. I was able to get out. I moved to Georgia and bought a house. 10 years later, I began my spiritual journey while participating in and then volunteering to help run Catholic-sponsored religious retreats at a monastery. I lived nearby and began visiting to reflect on my life. While I bloomed and grew, what's the name of the song again?
Edelweiss.
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 Okay, you know, bloom and grow forever. I'm not a good singer. But anyway, I still felt despondent, though. I heard love is all you need. It seemed nowhere near true, though. People were mean and vindictive. They were not changing, okay? I was waiting for them to change. I was waiting for the world to change. As I continued waiting for the world to change, I switched from Catholicism to Hindu principles and yoga, meditation, okay? Then one day I picked up a book titled Love is Letting Go of Fear by, I think his first name is Steve Jampolsky. And I became aware of the fact that I grew up in an environment where people, my family, felt like they were in a war zone every minute of every day. I'd listen to my mom's conversations on the phone as they talk for hours about how someone tried to do something to them and failed because of their weariness. Crouching tiger. And preemptive strikes. Okay, I think we're seeing some of that today too. I had to laugh because it was all about office politics and personal relationships. These people were not in a war zone, okay? Life had been good to them. At the same time, they taught me this stuff. Go primitive, check people out, never let them know you, always look for them to betray you. That was the reason why I felt unloved until then. They felt unloved and withheld affection in terms of endearment. They were kind to some and uncaring to people they didn't think mattered. This was a less intense model of what my peers in public housing were thinking. This is what drove my husband's actions. Does that attack, preemptive strike thing sound familiar when we think of what's happening today with certain countries being deemed a terrorist threat? While the ones that actually had people carry out attacks here are not even on the list. Getting back to the effect the book had on my perspective toward life, first let me say that the attack theory didn't just involve people. It also involved situation. The bus didn't come on time. I had to go to work today. My stove won't light. Kill that stove. I have to beat the stove. And to what result? Do you get a whole lot of relief? Or the pain of hitting an unyielding object? Love in need of love. Letting go of fear. Wait. I think revelations happen in nano increments along a standard learning curve. So taking in Jampolsky's perspective on things moved me from near zero on the curve. I took note of the fact that we are all connected in my meditation and Hindu's experience. It's something I had believed for my whole life, but also never acted on. I also began to change my response to the behavior of others. Who wants to admit they're an expletive? So if everybody's me and I'm everybody? You know? Or more importantly, attack myself. I became more restrained in my response to others' perceived transgressions against me. I began to get a glimpse of what Mr. Wilson back in the projects was saying. I also began to see people changing. No, that's not true. They didn't change. I just began to see people differently. My attitude toward perceived transgressions or inconveniences changed. 20 years later, 1996, I lost my footing and seriously fell back into responding to people in situations as if I was being attacked. In recent years, I find myself in constant struggle, especially when it comes to parenting my teenage grandson. He has been my latest teacher. I'm relearning the meaning of surrender in the context of love. It's been 40 years now since Stevie wrote his song, and 10 since John wrote his. In a 2015 interview, Stevie said his song was meant as a sermon that sent the message that love is hollow and must be fed. John said he wanted to voice that his generation was what his generation was feeling and get people talking about how things were and affecting a change through words. 2 years after his song, young people would claim responsibility for the election of Barack Obama. Do you guys agree with that? Okay. 10 years later, there was discussion about gerrymandering and voter suppression that watered down the vote of young people. Is there truth in John's words? Are a people corrupt? I'll leave that for another day. What I believe is this. When I listen closely, I hear my life experiences with regard to attaining a greater understanding of love. In both songs, and in the one that you'll hear at the end. It has now been 40 years since I was asked to apologize to a person I saw as an idiot and who should be in a landfill somewhere. The confusion about Mr. Wilson's words first engendered hopelessness and despair because I could not see anyone siding with me. That was followed by hope in the future. In small increments, I've learned to breathe, tolerate, forgive, and most importantly, to see my true self, which includes you guys, and act out based on that. I am you, you are me, we are love, divine. It leads me down the path from forgiveness to peace. And when we breathe in peace,
breathe out love.
Thank you. I also believe strongly in the concept of feeding love and waiting. Feeding love, as Stevie said, and waiting. Sometimes it is essential. In fact, they go hand in hand to me. Living my summers on a farm with my grandma Maybelle gives me examples. We would wait and let the fields rest after we harvested a crop and turned the soil over with the remains. We would till the soil and plant seeds and wait for them to grow. We put fertilizer down early on in hopes that it would help that crop mature, and we would get a good yield at the end of the year. Sometimes it was a yearly ritual. Sometimes it required several years, depending on what we wanted to plant. It took patience and attention. I mixed the ingredients to prepare a bread I only fixed for the most special occasion and wait for the dough to rise. I'm beating and banging this dough around and kneading and everything else. I consider that to be the active part, but then it's that passive, subtle part where you wait for that dough to rise. And then you have to add some heat. You put it in the oven. It still takes time and patience to bake. Then it's followed by a quiet, slow activity that I see as analogous to the daily grind. We still get up. We still go. We do the best we can to tolerate people who don't have the same value systems as us, day to day. Funny thing is, I rarely consider the love that goes into that. It's the love of the final product when at harvest time in the country, everybody gets together, brings their stuff, shares, you know, even have harvest celebrations and parties. And everyone's happy, and you can feel the love surrounding you. When my family sits down at the table, we're not going to talk about the sourdough bread. Inside joke. Actually, I'm going to bring it outside. They used to threaten each other with my sourdough. With my sourdough biscuits. Treating them like rocks. Fortunately, I did much better with rolls. But like I said, family gathered, a friendly fight, love, peace, joy. And so, then there's the pilgrims, the people who seek the shaman out. As soon as they get to him, the first thing when they state why they're there, the shaman says, "Ah, I've been waiting for you." And if you go back through the oral history, you often find that it's been pointed out that this person will come. And it could be decades back in that history. When the pilgrim returns home, the result is that they have new resolve and energy to carry out their task. The image on the cover was taken in the Sahara Desert back in January 2004. It was one of the coldest winters in the Sahara Desert I had ever known, and most of the people that were in my group had either. It rained a lot that year. It was an odd winter. And as you can see, there's lots of vegetation there. And I kept wondering, I've been here before. I've seen this place. Desert, hard pan, dunes, and that's it. Hard rock, that's it. But what I didn't see were those seeds that lay dormant, waiting for that rain for decades. And when it came, they flourished. It's my joy to have shared with you my happiness that comes from knowing who I am, and that I do not need to look outside myself for people or situations to change. I try to feed love every day and watch love grow. I can choose to be overt in my actions or subtle. The most important thing is to do it with tolerance, forgiveness, peace, love, and patience. And keep in mind, the depth of my love is reflected back to me through others. Thank you.